When we started this, never in my wildest dreams did I think that you and I were going to be covering an actual earthquake.
Earthquakes in the plural.
Well, aren't all earthquakes earthquakes in the plural?
Oh, no, I don't mean the earthquake in New York and the aftershock. I mean, you had Taiwan, major, major earthquake.
But who could think about Taiwan? I was shaking. I shook.
Well, if you looked at the videos of Taiwan where you had literal buildings falling and you compare that to New York where 99% of us went, wait, did I just feel something? Nah, I didn't feel anything.
Oh, no, I was clear.
Some
people, some people weren't.
Hyper alert.
Some people were not clear. I was super clear because it first started. You know how there's like sometimes there's a truck outside, like a big diesel truck.
Yes.
And it's like, brrr, and you feel that. And it's like, all right, there's a truck out there. And then it got like more intense. And I was thinking like, what is my crazy neighbor doing? You know? Like, what is he up to now?
Yes.
Then it was like, there was a split second where it was like, is the washing machine, like, is the dryer banging the washing machine on the spin cycle? And then it was just unmistakable.
Yes.
It was just like, something is happening, and I have no control of this.
So I was on the phone with my schwer, and we're in the middle of talking, and I said, wait, I think we're having an earthquake. And he goes, we're not having an earthquake. It's construction on the block. Stop. I'm like, no, I really, and you know, he knows me the way you know me, mm-hmm. and he knows that I assume the worst. I'm like, no, I really think there's an earthquake. He's like, oh my gosh, you know, you really?
Like, what am I going to do with you?
You need help. Right. I'm like, no, but I think it's an earthquake. Sure enough, it was an earthquake.
Wait a minute. So I'm not a person that uses the term new fear unlocked, but this is, like, after it was over, like, this deep anxiety set in. Like, I have another thing that I got to keep, like, in the back of my mind that maybe this is going to happen.
So you know what's strange is I didn't have any anxiety after. I kind of enjoyed it. Right? Isn't that weird? How do you explain that?
I don't know. You're a weird individual because I was like, you're just powerless. Like, there's just nothing to do.
I know, but afterwards, it was like an experience. You know that feeling is like, oh, I just went through an earthquake.
Yes,
nice.
I did have some of that. Yes. It's like, okay, LA has nothing on us right now.
Right. Exactly.
You know, like,
it's exciting.
Yeah. Like 4.8 is also not a
nothing.
Joke.
Right? No, come on. It was nothing.
It was not
really
nothing.
Ridiculous.
It was
nothing.
Not nothing. It was just that those moments of just uncertainty. Like, what is happening here?
But you know what? The only thing better than the earthquake were the tweets about the earthquake. And there were some great ones. There's one from a guy, Tsuri. He says, Mamish know what it felt like to be Kairach for a second.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, I saw that one. By the way, what did I do? The minute I started feeling it and I knew it was none of the above, like I knew it was not man-made, I just ran straight to Twitter.
Yes,
that's the only 100%. Way you're going to get like minute, like up to the second
yes.
news.
Yes, and WhatsApp. All the family chats were going crazy.
But even the family chats, like nobody knew what it was.
Right.
And then, but like you open Twitter and it's like, New York City earthquake.
Yes.
Like, did I just feel that? Like, is it just me? And then I knew that we were having something and I immediately, like, I called you. I called my father. I'm like, Daddy, what's happening?
Daddy, are you, help me, Daddy.
I'm like, Daddy. But like, we all got on it like a family conference, like, what is happening? And then the rest of the afternoon, I basically spent learning how to protect myself
from an earthquake.
Like, what do you do?
You go into the doorway, right?
Do you go into the doorway, under the table?
Under furniture,
do you get out into
yeah.
the street? What do?
Under furniture, into the doorway. It's so funny how I did. You know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. People with anxiety. You listeners who have anxiety, you know where I'm coming from. Anxiety is the fear of the unknown, right? It's the fear of what will happen, and you assume it's going to be bad. Most people who have that anxiety, when the bad happens, they kind of feel a relief because you've been waiting so long for this. Now when it happens, you go, ah, I told you.
Right,
told
because
you this
always
was coming.
The fear of the unknown is much worse than the actual experience.
Right. And then once it happens, also like now, we talk about all these potential problems. You said new fear unlocked.
Yes.
So we talk about that. And then it's like, you see, I was right. I was right to have a new fear. For example, I'm sure you saw the story of that metal piece that crashed through a house in Naples, Florida. And it went through two floors of the house. Turned out it was a piece of the International Space Station that came crashing down into their house. And that's a new fear unlocked.
You see, that doesn't bother me. You say new fear unlocked. I think new opportunity unlocked. Do you know what they're going to sell that piece of space debris for?
Yeah, but you have to walk out of it still alive.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm just saying, assuming you survive, the rest of your days will be probably lived in comfort and
peace.
I don't think so.
I think the United States government confiscated it.
Did it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, that's a bummer. But there's a lawsuit there. There's definitely a lawsuit there.
But who are you going to sue? Russia? Russia's part of the International Space Station. It's a conglomerate of a whole bunch of countries. Go call Vladimir and tell him that a piece of your space station crashed into my house, Vladimir.
Is it a joint effort?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it's paid for jointly by the world?
Yes. Bunch of countries, yeah. Huh. But the crazier thing is that on the heels of the earthquake, we had the total solar eclipse that we talked about in the last episode. And like just the juxtaposition of all these things happening.
It's enough to warrant an extra drink during Kiddish Club.
No, but it's not just an extra drink. It kind of feels like...
apocalyptic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like Hashem's trying to say something.
But here's the thing. We have passed these events and life is...
continuing.
Exactly. But, as normal.
No, but... so look, we had the earthquake in Taiwan and we looked at that and we were like, okay. Then we had the earthquake in the tri-state area in the United States, right? For those not here. One of the epicenters, according to some accounts, there was several places that they said were the epicenter. One of the main things being recorded was that the epicenter was Lebanon, New Jersey. Yeah. Okay. Coincidence? Seriously. That's not a coincidence. That's clearly Hashem sending a message.
That what? We should beware of Lebanon?
No.
Like, what's the message?
Well, we know that a solar eclipse we mentioned in the last, for example, put the earthquake aside. Solar eclipse means Hashem is upset about how the Goyim are treating Jews.
Okay.
And how is he showing it? Lebanon, where one of the biggest threats to Israel right now is Lebanon, right? Hezbollah in Lebanon.
You're not making the connection. You're talking about earthquake and you're talking about solar
Hashem
eclipse.
Hashem showing signs.
Just you're saying overall signs, general
the
signs.
The signs are there.
And signs and wonders.
And here's an interesting thing about eclipses. We should have mentioned this last time. This is the Musser point of our podcast. You ready for the Musser?
Wait, before we get to the Musser, how did you enjoy the eclipse?
Well, I'll get to it. First, I want to say the Musser.
All right.
The fact that we have a total solar eclipse, so the sun is 400 times larger than the moon, okay? How on earth could the moon cover something 400 times its size?
Well, obviously, distance comes into play.
Right. So the moon is exactly 400 times closer to the earth than the sun. Therefore, it's able to perfectly block it out. Now, if you are a person who doesn't believe in Hashem, that is the most insane coincidence ever,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's perfection.
Yeah.
It's exactly lined up so that it makes a perfect solar eclipse. And you see the hand of Hashem and everything.
Yes.
Should we end the episode with that? I think we should end the episode with that.
Here's the thing, though. You know, you're not supposed to look at the moon, right?
Yes, true.
You're not supposed to. That's why, according to most, you just glance, even during Kiddush Levana, when we make a blessing on the moon.
Right.
You just take a certain, like, just a quick glance at the moon, because you're not supposed to look at the moon. And I was wondering, like, does this have any bearing during the solar eclipse? Like, am I not supposed to look at the moon?
we know you're not supposed to look at the sun. That much we got, right?
But I think the reason is because of the embarrassment of the moon, because it's so much smaller. But like during a solar eclipse, I feel like the moon is like not so embarrassed. Like
right.
He's championing.
That's a good point.
He's like a champion now. Like
That's
he's like, point. Oh, I'm like in front of the sun.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I also have to say something. So last episode, you asked about how are you going to enjoy the eclipse? And I said, yeah, we're going to get like 92% coverage. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Okay. We should have gone. We got invited by one of our listeners to Cleveland. Thank you. Shout out to Heichel. Thank you for inviting us. We should have gone.
Bro, you're the hardest person to convince to do anything.
You should have forced me.
I can't. I don't. I only have a certain amount of kayach. Like, I don't have all that.
Okay, so here's the reason why it was ridiculous, right? You asked me how my viewing was. So I had the glasses. I stood outside in the middle of New York City with 100 other people, and we're staring. And all you see basically is a little crescent of a sun. Great.
Right, through the glasses.
Through the glasses. It's still bright. It's still, everything's normal.
I mean, it's darkened. It's a little eerie.
A little dark, a little eerie, yes. Then I spoke to people who went, including coworkers, who went to the actual full solar eclipse. And what they told me, and when the pictures are psychotic. So you're standing there, it's the middle of the day, it's light out, then it becomes pitch black, okay? And the lights are not on because the city hasn't turned on the lights yet. And all the birds stop chirping and all the crickets start making the cricket sounds because they think it's night.
Huh.
And you look at the sun, at the eclipse, with your naked eye. You don't need glasses.
I was wondering if that's true.
Yes,
it's true. How is that true? Isn't the UV still coming around the moon?
It only when it's fully perfectly covering, you can look at it with the naked eye. And the pictures, if you look at the pictures, it's amazing. And I was looking at pictures of people that were there. So I saw a picture from someone who went to Buffalo to see it because it was in the path. But the weather was so bad that it was completely cloudy. So he didn't see the eclipse.
That's the biggest bummer ever.
Biggest bummer ever. But he's taking pictures and showing pictures. And he shows, you know, from 1 minute to the next, brightness. And darkness. Then he's in darkness. I was bugging out.
You also realize what like 5 or 6% of sun does.
Yes.
It just gives you total light.
Yes.
Like that's the strength of the sun.
It's insane.
But you know, we're not going to get another one till like 2079.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll be here.
We'll be here.
Yeah?
We'll still be recording. We're going to bring you episode, you know,
we're going to be kind of old for this gig.
Welcome to, we are back. What? I don't know what just happened. Okay, before we continue,
hopefully we'll have a show sponsor by then.
Yes, hopefully. And so back to the whole thing. So the earthquakes, the eclipses, we have the cicadas that are coming out, right? Now they're saying there's two broods of cicadas. These are the bugs that make those sounds.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
Yeah, two broods are coming out. One's every 7 years, one's every 17 years or whatever. And they said there's going to be trillions, trillions with a T, okay?
Trillions of bugs.
Right at Pesach time. You know what I'm saying?
Locusts. Basically locusts.
That's what it is. It's a maca. You're telling me this is not Hashem? Wait. What about that story about the farmer, the Christian farmer, who's been raising a bunch of paradumas? Did you see that?
Yes, but those are like Texas Red Angus.
So?
It's a breed. It's a breed. Like, I don't know, like we think that it's a very rare thing, and probably in ancient times it was.
It is a rare thing. It's even rare for him. It's not the Texas Red Angus. I don't believe it's just thousands of them like that. It's a very specific thing, and he's keeping them, and he's shipping some of them to Israel.
So what are you saying?
Mashiach, Mashiach, Mashiach. We need Rabbi Hul. Rabbi Hul, if you're listening, we need you back.
Bro, something is going on all the time. Like, every day is a day to do tshuva.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, like, we just don't notice it.
Shouldn't need signs and wonders to say, you know what, maybe something's happening. Something's always happening.
But it helps. Yes. Signs and wonders help.
Listen, if that's what motivates you, then by all means, take it, internalize it, and do tshuva. Now, can we get back to the cast?
Yes, we can. So we have a whole bunch of shout-outs. I don't know what happened this week. The eclipse made everybody cuckoo or something. But we have like a million shout-outs.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of shout-outs. So we're going to do them quickly because there's a lot. Okay, first of all, shout-out to VVD in upstate New York. Thanks for being a listener. Shout-out to Aaron in Baltimore on his bar mitzvah.
Mazel tov, Aaron.
Shout-out also to Yossi Cooperstein.
Thank you for listening. We also have a shout-out to Akiva Newman and David Swerdloff. They both have their birthday together and both finished Masechta Bava Kamma together same week, which is tremendous. Like, I feel like this deserves like even more than a shout-out. Because if you're going to put it in the work and finish Bava Kamma, you get an extra mazel tov.
No gift card, just a mazel tov.
No, we'd go broke. Okay, broke.
Okay, good. Also, Shlomi K, happy birthday. Thank you for listening. And then we have a shout out to Yossi.
We don't have any other information, but Yossi, happy birthday.
So for the record, I said we're not going to say this. And you said, oh, what do you mean? But
it is his birthday.
It's his birthday. Yossi's not going to be happy if we don't mention it.
Yeah.
But we're not mentioning where he's from. We're not mentioning his full name. We're not mentioning who asked us to mention this. It's just Yossi. You know who you are.
Chevra, the more information we have, the easier you make our jobs.
Yes. If you want us to do a shout out, give us some info. But either way, we hope Yossi, you know, enjoyed the shout out. And now that we gave you guys the shout outs, we need some shout outs too. And when I say shout outs, I mean coffee. Go right now to buymeacoffee.com/Kiddush Cub and buy us a coffee. It keeps the lights on. It keeps the tape running.
Yeah, but lights are necessary, especially during an eclipse.
Yes. Could you imagine if we had no lights and there was an eclipse?
This episode would never come out.
Right. Or at least we'd have to wait 30 seconds for the eclipse to pass and then we'd have light again.
We are subsisting now on current coffees. Yes. And that supply is dwindling.
We're going to have to turn to decaf soon.
You don't want to hear Kiddush Club decaf.
You don't want Kiddush Club decaf. Oh, speaking of decaf coffee, by the way, you know, this was going to come up later. I thought you would love this because I know how much you hate decaf and you claim that decaf is not really coffee.
No, it is a beverage ba'alma.
Right. It doesn't have a Shem coffee according to you, right?
Right.
So there's an article I saw that says A health advocacy group is trying to ban decaf coffee. Now, you know I'm a big decaf coffee drinker.
I want to donate to them right now.
I'll give you their link. They're saying that there's a chemical that's used called methylene chloride, and it's used to take the caffeine out of coffee, and it's been designated as a carcinogen by the World Health Organization and Environmental Protection Agency. And we're just drinking decaf like there's no tomorrow.
Well, speak for yourself. The most I'll drink decaf is like a week before like Tisha B'Av or something, or Yom Kippur.
Right, you just wean yourself off.
Right. But it also makes me wonder if that same chemical is used in Coca-Cola. Because you know that Coca-Cola is made from the coca plant, and they take the cocaine out of the leaf before they make the cola.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were saying because of caffeine, but we know that the caffeine from the coffee goes into the Coca-Cola.
Right.
And speaking of Coke, I'm happy you brought it up. One of our listeners requested we do a taste test of new Coca-Cola Spiced. I didn't even know this existed.
Well, where did you find it?
Walgreens, where I find everything.
Oh, so it's national. It's nationally out there.
Yeah, you want to hear something funny? So I actually was buying, I meant to buy a regular Coke Zero. And I got to the counter and I realized it was a cherry Coke Zero.
Okay.
Which I like also, but I happened to have wanted the regular Coke Zero because specifically for the taste test. And I told the woman at the counter, I'm like, oh shoot, I got the wrong thing. And she's like, no, no worries. So she looks down and she goes, oh, you accidentally got the spiced, right? I'm like, no, I got cherry and I want regular. But apparently people keep picking up the spiced accidentally and getting upset.
Because it does look exactly like the
cherry. Exactly.
Me but personally,
how does it taste? We don't know.
I prefer Diet Coke. Like that's...
Don't talk to me. Don't speak to me.
I don't like Coke. I can't drink Coca-Cola.
You and Trump. The two of you. I like Coke Zero. I'm a big Coke Zero fan.
No.
I don't like Diet Coke
because
much.
Coke Zero tastes more like actual Coke.
Yes.
It's exact almost.
Yes. We can't tell the difference.
I never liked Coke, like never a day in my life.
You like Pepsi? Because then we really can't.
No.
I actually like Pepsi.
No. I was always, I guess I was brought up on diet soda.
Yeah, same.
As a child.
Yeah, because we're Jewish. It kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah, but so how'd you get into Coke? How'd you get into regular Coke? I could never drink regular Coke. I never had a taste for it.
No, I always had Diet Coke, but then when Coke Zero came out, I was like,
why not try this?
This is a new world for me. I was so happy. Okay, so anyway, we're going to be trying spiced Coke for the first time right here. So we're going to start by drinking regular Coke Zero so that we could compare it to the spiced Coke Zero and understand why the Walgreens cashier is telling me that people are getting upset about the spiced. You ready? Take your sip of the regular Coke Zero.
L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Yeah, as advertised, this is Coke Zero.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent drink.
Debatable.
Okay, we are going to move on now to the Coca-Cola Spiced. Are you ready? Hear that sound? You know what that means.
Coke, if you're listening, he's your guy.
Advertising opportunities abound. Wait.
I'm sampling the bouquet right now. This smells
interesting. Oh,
very interesting.
Interesting.
No, it's almost like it smells like a slush. Just smell it first.
You're right. What is sweet. That? It's fruity. Right.
It smells like.
I like it.
I like it too.
I like the smell.
It's almost like it has that blue raspberry type of smell.
Yes. Yes. Like a tarty kind of a tangy.
I'm liking this.
Okay.
So
here
far.
We go. Here we go. L'chaim. Antibiotics. Right?
It doesn't taste as it smells.
No.
That's for sure.
100%.
Which is very weird.
Very weird.
It has some Coke. It has some weird Robitussin.
Right.
Like
medicine.
Aftertaste in the middle.
100%.
I was like excited. And now that excitement has waned.
Yeah. I think. So if regular Coke Zero, let's say.
Okay.
Let's say you'd rate that on a scale from 1 to 10. Let's say it's a 7. What would this be?
So originally, I had this at a 5. My next sip has me putting it at an 8.
What?
Yeah.
You're increasing.
I know.
I'm decreasing.
I can't control these things.
From the smell, I thought it was going to be an 8.
Me too.
And now I'm at 5.
I think the first sip had you a little off balance. And now that you taste the second sip, I think it's growing on me. It has grown.
No, not me. Not me. I don't know. I can't get the Robitussin slash antibiotic. Yeah, it's the aftertaste.
The aftertaste is the Robitussin. That's what I just realized. During the drink, while it's going down, I'm like, I like this. And then after, it's like,
afterwards, you're like in slippers on a bed in a robe, right?
Yeah.
That's what your brain
absolutely
does.
Absolutely, fever.
And exactly. Exactly. PTSD. I'm having flu PTSD from this. All right, it's out. Okay, there you have it. And now I understand, personally, I understand why the Walgreens cashier is telling me that people are upset that they're accidentally
picking up the spiced Coke.
Exactly. Okay, so let's move on. There's a lot to cover. I don't know how much we're going to get to.
I don't know how we have not gotten to it already.
So we're going to do, I mean, this has been a little bit different from our usual episode flow, right? So let's keep it up. Why not?
Yeah, I'm down.
So let's talk about sports.
Go ahead.
Right? So first of all, March Madness is over.
I didn't even know it began.
Yes,
I mean, it did because you told me. But
yes. And I'm happy to say, as you know, I was in the March Madness this year. I'm happy to say I came in, guess which place?
Please be like top five.
I'm second to last.
Oy.
Second to last.
Do you win anything?
No. Not only didn't I win. Well, I won.
Or do you owe anything?
So bragging rights in that I didn't come in last.
Okay.
I'm proud of myself. Aren't you proud of me? I didn't come in last.
Mm. You could have done better.
Could I though?
No, that's the honest truth.
Exactly. No. And here's the crazy part. The only person who did worse than me mm-hmm. is a coworker who let AI choose every single pick.
Well, why is it not working for this? Like, why is AI not intelligent enough?
Exactly. Exactly.
What are you saying?
I don't know. Exactly. The limits of AI. That's what this episode is going to be called, the limits of AI. So I guess AI is not replacing us so quickly.
Right. This time. Some time.
There's a little bit of time. Not much.
Some.
Don't get comfortable. Time. Okay. Also in sports news. So we've been talking about this. We both also know, well, you know a little bit. I know nothing about boxing, but I do know a little bit about Mike Tyson because, I mean, he's quite famous. Probably the most famous boxer of all time.
Not about all time. Muhammad Ali?
No. He's more famous.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he did better. I mean, he's renowned. He bit off a guy's ear.
Yeah. That was big.
Right? For those who don't know. He bit off a guy's ear.
During a boxing match, not just randomly in the street, right? He didn't just
walk. Because it's okay to do it during a boxing match.
No, it's not. Those are against the rules. I'm pretty sure that there are rules against biting someone else's ear off. But yeah, that's intense.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So he's in his 50s and he's fighting Jake Paul, who was formerly like this influencer YouTube guy who's now boxing. And they got into words and now... this is actually being promoted. It's going to be an actual fight between these two. And he's like in his 20s and Mike Tyson's in his 50s. And, you know, I personally...
As you say it, it's just so insane. Just the age difference is insane. But Jake Paul is supposedly really good at what he does. He's a really good fighter. Mike Tyson is Mike Tyson. It doesn't matter that he's 55. Is that the age?
Yeah. They call him Iron Mike. That's his name.
But you can see the video, right? There's videos of him training. You don't want to even be like near this guy on a bad day.
For sure. I mean, he's famous. He's famous for saying he had a very famous line. I believe it's everybody thinks they know something until they get punched in the face. Right?
I don't know if that's his line, but yeah.
I think that's his line. Yeah. So it actually was. It was Tyson. Yeah. He said... The line is, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Which is true.
Isn't that great?
It is accurate.
Great? Yeah. So, I mean, this is pretty crazy. If I had to choose, I would choose Iron Mike.
Me too.
Right?
There's no sleeping on Iron Mike Tyson.
The other guy's younger. He has more energy, etc. But, you know, a couple of punches from Iron Mike, you know.
He's going to put the lights out on this guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty crazy.
Because it's not just about speed and agility. It is about stamina. And
technique.
Yeah.
Technique.
And experience.
Yeah.
You know how much experience Mike Tyson has?
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. So we're going to keep you guys updated on that. And also, I mean, this is not sports news, but it's vaguely related. I mean, I have family members who have been on the African safari. We've covered this, you know, a little bit. I never understood it. You know, I don't need to be inoculated for, you know, dengue fever. I'm not interested. Right. If I have to go on vacation.
If I have to take shots. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Vacation. It's not happening.
Not happening. We covered on this cast a relative of mine who had told me when they were on safari how the elephants are the most dangerous thing. They go close to the tigers. They go close to the lions. But elephants are the most dangerous, bar none. And in fact, a woman from the United States passed away when she was attacked. Her car was attacked by a charging elephant, and we have the video for it.
Wait, where did that occur?
African safari.
Wow.
Yeah. So the elephant charged them. It came, and with little effort, the elephant flips over the Jeep that they're in. And unfortunately, it was an older woman, but she didn't make it. And so, once again, see, this is not a new fear that's unlocked, because I had this fear already.
No, but also but you're never going there. You'll never come face to face with an elephant.
What, you would go to an African safari? You would do it?
If I was in Africa, I would go. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, what are we doing today, honey? We're going to go to the safari.
Yeah, I'm down, because it's right next door.
No, but you know tons of people, tons of Jews.
Yeah, a lot of people go.
A lot of people go.
But you know what? There's something to be said. I mean, they want to see nature. They want to see wildlife. It's a valid tourist attraction. I'm not going to take that away from them. Yes, it carries...
Oh, I would take it away from them.
It carries risk. I'll give you that. But you can't just invalidate the trip. It's a trip. If you have the guts to do it, by all means.
You know what else is a trip? Going down to see the Titanic. And we know how that ended up.
That's also true. Right? Listen, you go on African safari and pray that you don't pass away. That's it.
Yes, I agree. And speaking of elephants, by the way, so there's this whole thing going on. Do you know what's going on between Botswana and Germany?
I don't. I don't keep updated on those politics.
Really?
On those negotiations,
shocked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. So Germany has been, you know, bashing Botswana a little bit because they don't like that Botswana allows the hunting of elephants. Mm. So they're going to ban any import of any, you know, trophy hunts, specifically of elephants, coming into Germany.
A little ironic that that's coming from Germany, but right. Go ahead. Yes. Yeah.
No, but that's not, because we know even the Nazis, right, very famously, they were, you know, super empathetic to their animals. You know,
really?
Yeah, very famously, I forgot who, one of these big-time Nazi SS guys who...
Loved their dogs or something?
Loved their dog, yeah.
Yeah, Zuhund. Home. Zuhund.
Yeah. No, very famously, you know, after a day spent at a concentration camp, came home and his dog had hurt himself or something, and he, you know...
Nursed it back to
no,
health.
No, he sobbed. He ended up really? Sobbing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just goes to show you how sick and insane they were.
Yeah. And so now Germany's been, you know, bashing Botswana. And now Botswana, what they're saying is, look, we
don't have room. That's it. No,
what they're saying is like this. They're saying, we did such a good job of taking care of the elephants. We have so many. We have over 130,000 elephants in the country. And the only way to keep the population in check is by allowing hunting. And they told Germany, hey, you don't like it? You think we're wrong? No problem. We are gifting you and sending you 20,000 elephants.
What do you do when 20,000 elephants show up at your door, you know?
Right. It's crazy. So like, and they're saying, and make sure you don't hurt them. And by the way, just so you know, they're not crazy and they're not just saying this, they've gifted this amount of elephants to other countries as well.
Oh, so they're legit. Like,
they're legit.
They're not just like posturing.
No.
This is real.
This is real.
Hans, we need you here to sign for a delivery. That is pretty big. This is a pretty big delivery. I mean, I don't even know what to, like, where do they begin? Where do you start? Would you open a zoo? You can't open a zoo.
With 20,000
elephants? There's nowhere to put them. Where would you even, like...
No, Botswana says that they murder tons of people every year. They destroy the property.
They're menaces.
They're a menace, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the Germans, they want them to get a taste of that. And I don't blame them.
Now we will see how you deal.
And the Germans, you know, they're for sure, like, super confident. You know, these Yekis are, like, totally, like, right? You know how they're not scared.
They think they have this in the bag.
Exactly. But it's crazy because, like, imagine, what do you do with 20,000 elephants? It's just mind-boggling.
You know what? You could probably march them across a new bridge.
Oh.
You remember they did that over the Brooklyn Bridge?
Is that real? That's a real story?
That's a legit story.
Wait, let me fact check it. Oh, you're right. Here it is. Yeah, it was the Brooklyn Bridge.
What year was that in?
It was on May 24th, 1883. The Brooklyn Bridge opened to traffic. People were scared to cross because they didn't think it was going to hold.
Well, could you blame them? I'm saying 1883.
Yeah.
You can't trust anything in 1883.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. We saw what happened in Baltimore. And then P.T. Barnum, famous circus guy, Barnum and Bailey Circus, he marched his elephants across the bridge. He marched 21 elephants across the bridge with 17 camels. And that helped convince people that it was safe.
And then people started, what, taking their wagons across?
Like, what? If 21 elephants and 17 camels could cross.
What compelled him to do such a thing?
He was a showman, right? He was a showman, and he did it to help specifically to help prove that the bridge was okay. But so imagine it wasn't, you know?
Completely gratis. He just decided to risk 21 elephants. Maybe they'll fall into the sea. Maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah. He would have been out of business, right? Yeah, exactly. Right?
And out of life.
Okay. So that was a rather long digression.
Right? If you can call it that, sure.
Yeah. It's time we cover a little bit what's going on in Israel.
Go.
Right? So first of all, nobody knows what's going on with the IDF. They withdrew everyone from the south. Right?
So no one's in Gaza?
I believe they're still in the north, not in the south.
Okay.
But nobody understands why. The only thing we could assume is that it's in response to Biden. So we should talk a little bit about what happened. So Biden, so we know that Israel accidentally, it was very unfortunate. They killed seven of those chefs that were there giving aid, part of the WCK organization. And the whole world went crazy about it.
Yeah, well, they were casualties of war.
Yes. And Israel did a deep dive. They investigated. And if you look at the data of what they invested, I'm not going to get into it. But bottom line is they had seen Hamas, you know, fighters going into the trucks, these aid trucks, shooting in the air, which is a signal to other Hamas people. You know, we know that Hamas is taking all the aid. It's not like they just were targeting them and saying, here's a perfect target. Let's get these guys. No, they were working with these guys from day one, helping and coordinating getting aid to the Gazan people with this organization. So it's a little ridiculous. And the head of the organization, you know, he came out obviously saying, you know, Israel's doing it on purpose. They're targeting civilians, but it's clearly not that. You know, and the drone that they were using had thermal imaging, so they couldn't see that on the top of these cars it said WCK on it. Okay, it was a horrible mistake. So Biden came out and he made a statement and basically said, this is ridiculous and Israel has to have an immediate ceasefire. No conditions, meaning nothing to do with hostages getting back. You have to have a ceasefire right now.
Which is absurd. That's absurd. There's no chance of that happening without the return of our people.
And yet, right after that, all the troops are pulled out of Gaza. How do you explain?
I don't have an explanation. All I can tell you is it's not like Biden has his hands clean of civilian deaths.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Absolutely.
Because when they did the airdrop, how many innocent Gazans died?
Right.
Just dropping food. You dropped food on people's heads. You didn't even accomplish anything else. Like, at least the Israeli army is accomplishing things like getting rid of terrorists. And unfortunately, there's civilian deaths. But you didn't do that. You just killed, what is it, five, six?
Yeah.
Just civilians in
Gaza.
Trying
to help.
Right. Trying to help them. You dropped food on their heads.
Right.
And now they're no longer with us.
Right.
So maybe look in the mirror.
Yeah. Or tell us how we could do it better.
No, or just understand that in this situation, urban combat, urban warfare, this is going to happen. And there's no chance that you can come in and tell the Israeli army that they have to stop operations because of civilian casualties. It's just not the way things go. And you should know that.
And as far as being hypocritical, I mean, if you look at some of the things that accidentally happened from, you know, the United States itself, In urban encounters. So, for example, in 2016 in Afghanistan, a U.S. airstrike that was targeting Taliban fighters, it killed 30 people, mostly women and children, at a wedding.
And nobody talks about that.
Nobody talks about that.
You'll never hear that.
No, nobody was fired. Israel fired the commander and another person. Nobody. And that's fine. Nobody says, oh, America was doing, you know, you didn't take care of civilian lives the way you should have. Nobody says that.
Right. And that's a wedding. How tragic is that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not the only wedding, believe it or not. There was another incident. In 2008, a U.S.-led coalition near the village of Azizabad in Afghanistan, an airstrike resulted in the deaths of at least 90 people, mostly women and children.
And at a wedding.
Yes. Is that crazy?
It is. It's not crazy. That's the thing. The thing is that this is what should be expected in a war zone.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's a war zone. Exactly. Right. It's called a war zone. It's not called a peace zone.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, I'm just making sure.
Yes.
And just as another example, Israel itself, how many IDF soldiers were killed in friendly fire? Do you know?
I don't know the number.
Take a guess.
I want to say that it's 40.
Okay. What percentage of total deaths? If you had to guess, right? So now,
obviously, 6% is my number.
Right. That's what you would think, right?
Right.
Because obviously, the one thing they're super careful of is not to kill their own soldiers.
Correct.
20%.
No.
20%.
That's a tragic number.
Tragic number. But what does that tell you?
That they're doing their best.
Yes. If 20% of the IDF deaths were from friendly fire, could you imagine these randos who are there because they want to tikkun olam and they want to go give aid in the middle of a war zone?
Tikkun olam.
Exactly. Exactly. So in response to Biden, so there was some responses, mostly from the Democrats. Pelosi decided to jump in, and her and AOC and a bunch of people are demanding, they wrote a letter to Biden demanding that he stop any transfer of weapons to Israel. But unlike the rest of the Democrats, our favorite senator had a response.
You gotta love John Fetterman.
John Fetterman.
I can't say it enough times.
I'm surprised. You know, why didn't we dress up as John Fetterman on Purim?
I think we had one.
Did we?
I think I saw one.
So easy. Hoodie, shorts, you're good.
Yeah, I definitely saw the costume. I'm not sure if it was submitted to us or not. I can't remember.
I don't
remember.
Think so, because that person would have won. I would have said that person wins.
Right, but it's an easy costume. Basketball shorts, hoodie.
So easy.
Easy.
So he posted on Twitter, X, whatever. He responded to a New York Times headline that said, in a call with Benjamin Netanyahu, President Biden called an airstrike that killed aid workers unacceptable and appeared to condition support on how Israel changes course. And in response, Fetterman responded, in this war against Hamas, no conditions for Israel.
Fetterman for president.
He is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's going against his own party. Do you understand that?
Of course I understand. He may need to re-identify after this.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to get elected in a Democratic matzav.
100%. I'm with you. And we're not really going to weigh in. There's a lot of infighting going on in Israel. We're not going to talk about the Haredim and the draft. I mean, you know that Supreme Court overturned another law that said that the Haredim could be deferred from the military. And they basically ruled that they must begin drafting Haredim immediately. Now, we're not going to weigh in on this. This is a very loaded topic.
There's nothing to weigh in on. I mean, we obviously know what we know.
Right. But I'm saying we don't live there. There's people on both sides. We're not going to weigh in on this. But one thing I would like to say is I think the timing is just wrong. Hamas, we know that Hamas openly said that the reason they did October 7th was specifically because they saw infighting in Israel. So they said, oh, perfect time. Why are you creating infighting now? This is the wrong time. Just save it.
Agree. And the protection that learning affords is just cannot be overstated.
Forget about the spiritual. Of course, we could talk spiritual, but forget about spiritual.
You're saying just in being, like, we don't need machlekes,
right.
Period.
Just not now.
No fighting
unity.
Right now.
Keep the unity.
Got it.
And I'm sure you saw, so there was a bunch of these protesters at the Slobodka Yeshiva blocking the road, and we have a video, we're going to share it in the WhatsApp group. They were blocking the road, and they were demanding to speak to the Rosh Yeshiva. So, I mean, I love this because it's just such a yeshivish thing to do, right? You
yes,
saw the video.
I saw it.
So in the video, I mean, no point in playing it really, but what ends up happening is they marched out the cook, the yeshiva's cook. He's an old man with a long gray beard. They marched him out of the yeshiva,
like
singing and dancing.
With a frock and, yes. and everything.
Yes, and they're singing. And so the protesters are like, oh, so you see, we got him. There's the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the cook.
Typical bait and switch.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. And so once he came out, so now the protesters, like all the, they were like, oh, okay, I guess they did what we wanted. And they left. And the Rosh Yeshiva was able to leave. He had a meeting to go to, and he was able to leave because they left.
I mean, only a Gemara cup could think of this.
I like to think it wasn't just the Gemara cup. I like to think that some of those are listeners of this cast.
You think so?
Yeah. And they were like, guys,
what would Kiddush Club do?
Yes.
I know.
What would they have us do?
Right.
Get the cook. So good. So good. And so anyway, we need to stay united. That's the bottom line. Because the enemies of Israel are everywhere. That's the truth, right? They're
Without
everywhere,
question.
Unfortunately. And unfortunately, they're here in the United States. We talk about them. You know, Pelosi decided to join with these people. And that brings us to a segment that we call the anti-Semite spectrum.
Oh.
It's been a little while.
Yes.
But before we get into the anti-Semite spectrum, I do want to mention a Dershowitz clip that you sent. And in this clip, let me play it for you. Here it is.
I have a deal for Sinwa. If you surrender, I will defend you. If you surrender and turn yourself over to the Israeli authorities, they will put you on trial and I will be your defense attorney. Deal? Got a deal? Come out with
we'll mention it. But is
got yourself a pro bono lawyer. I will fly to Israel. I will defend you without cost. and I may even win. But you have to come out and surrender first, and then I'll be your lawyer.
Is there anybody you wouldn't defend?
Obviously, I wouldn't defend somebody who's a continuing criminal who would go back and commit more crimes. I draw a line there. I don't defend people a second time.
A little controversial offering legal aid to Sinwar.
It's a little crazy.
And wait, and he says I might even win.
Right.
That's bizarre.
But what about the fact that he says, well, is there anyone that you wouldn't defend? And he's like, of course, I wouldn't defend an active criminal.
Right. So he's betting on the fact that Sinwar is going to do tshuva.
Right. Right. That's a little weird.
Pretty bold.
Like, Dershowitz is like, yeah, what do you think? I would just defend anybody? I would only defend Sinwar. Right? The mastermind behind the worst Jewish tragedy since the Holocaust.
Right. Exactly.
But that's okay. And even more so, like, who is he pandering to? Like, is Sinwar, you think he's listening to this? Like, is he going to hear this offer?
Maybe he will. Why not? That's enough with Al Jazeera. So negative. Always negative. Fake news. Put on the Jewish guy with the tiny ears. What's his name? Zev Brenner. Yeah, put him.
I don't know if he's really listening to
you
that.
You never know.
You never know.
You never
well,
know.
He's not reading Al Jazeera. He's not watching Al Jazeera. Israel blocked it, right? We covered that in the last cast.
Right. He's got to be watching something.
Right. Maybe he's listening to us. Well, listen, we'll take it. Listens are listens.
Downloads a download.
I'm not offering to defend him in a court like Dershowitz. Okay, but moving to the anti-Semites, we need to do a deep dive on John Stewart, which we're not going to do in this episode, but we'll get back to him. I just wanted to mention, he's a Jewish celebrity, personality. He has a show, and he is definitely an anti-Semite. He's going on the list, but we're going to get to that in a future episode, because right now, we're going to be talking about a different person. Our fellow podcaster, the biggest in the business, none other than
Joe Rogan.
That's right.
Gotta be.
It's Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, you know, I was debating for a long time. Is he on the spectrum? Is he not on the spectrum? I think I'm comfortable with saying he's on the spectrum.
Well, listen, I heard that podcast. I heard his segment with Coleman Hughes. Is that who it is?
That's right.
Who, by the way, Coleman Hughes, tremendous defending of Israel and the IDF.
Absolutely. Well, let's play it. How about we play it?
Go for it.
I listened to your podcast with Kurt Metzger, who I know, and I've been on his podcast, had a great time on his pod.
He's a fun dude.
He is. But I think I disagree with you both kind of on the Israel issue, on the idea. There was one point where you were kind of saying it's almost as if the Jews are doing what was done to them.
Well,
as if it's genocide.
I'm saying that when you're killing 30,000 innocent civilians in response to something that killed 1,200 innocent civilians, and you're continuing to bomb an area into oblivion, which is what it looks like when you're looking at Gaza, there's many people that have made the argument that that is at least the steps of genocide or a form of genocide. You're destroying thousands and thousands of people's homes and killing them.
So when you say 30,000 civilians, it's not 30,000 civilians that have been killed, though.
How many thousands?
So according to Gaza Health Ministry, which is run by Hamas, the number they have is 32,000, but they don't distinguish between Hamas and civilians.
How many members of Hamas are there?
40,000, something like that. I don't think the number is known, but it's tens of thousands. So Hamas says 32,000 people have been killed, civilians and soldiers. Israel says 13,000 soldiers have been killed by Israel. So if you just being... Let's not doubt either number. They could both be inflated. But if both of those numbers are accurate, which they may or may not be, that would be 13,000 soldiers killed, 19,000 civilians killed, which for urban combat in the Middle East is a very normal ratio.
I see what you're saying. If you wanted to look at it cold and objectively, yeah.
He schooled him. I mean, he schooled Rogan.
But which is actually the part I wanted to get to is, do you think that Rogan is now accepting of everything that Coleman Hughes is saying? Like, he came at it almost ignorant of the situation.
No, but he doesn't. See, that's the thing. He weighs in constantly. He weighs in on these things, and he already said that Israel's committing a genocide. He already said, he defended Ilhan Omar when she said it's all about the Benjamins. We covered that. Where he's like, yeah, it's not anti-Semitic. The Jews are obsessed with money. Like,
and he said, I'm also obsessed with money. I get $250 million to do this podcast.
Right.
I love money.
He also had Roger Waters on his show. Roger Waters, we know, is extreme on the anti-Semite spectrum. He had Abby Martin. She's a super psycho independent journalist anti-Semite, super anti-Semite.
So I agree that he does go on the spectrum somewhat. Do I think he's an anti-Semite? Absolutely no. He's parroting what the media feeds the people. That's what he's parroting. He's listening to the rhetoric out there. He's on social media. He's hearing what's going on. And he's just parroting that on his show.
Okay, but he's...
So wait a second. So he... Like, it's clear to me when he starts this dialogue that it is... That he's ignorant. Like, he just doesn't know what's happening in the region.
So then shut your mouth.
But that's not his job. His job... But he gets paid to open it.
So go research. Do a drop of research. Why would you... You know what I'm saying?
So the thing about his episodes are they're organic. It's just wherever the conversation leads, right?
Okay.
He didn't have... I don't think he had the forewarning or the preparation for this topic. He came into it with whatever he knew. And I'm happy that there was somebody like Coleman Hughes to give him the education.
Oh, he did great.
And I think he accepted it to a degree, you know?
I mean, we'll see. We'll see where he goes from here. But once you have that many strikes... To me, you're on the spectrum.
Like I said, I don't think he belongs off the spectrum. Like, okay, once good, you talk good, like good. That, like just the talking points.
It's too much.
Right.
Too much.
I agree. It's just, you know what it is? You put somebody on the spectrum when he's not a friend to Israel. I think he's neutral.
No, I think he's on the spectrum. I think he's on the spectrum. Because, again, if you're defending Ilhan Omar at a time where even Democrats were not defending her, you're defending her and saying, no, Jews are obsessed with money. Come on. You have a certain outlook on the world, and it's shining
through.
Yeah,
but he also gets paid for clicks. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is a showman. Yes. At the end of the day.
But you don't have to be, you know what I mean? He's very good at being rational about things, you know, and this was just not cool.
Where are you putting him on the spectrum?
He's, well, Bernie Sanders is back on. You know, we defended Bernie. He's super on the spectrum. Bernie is up there at, like, Jon Stewart, I'm going to put at, he's a number 7 right now. No, he's a number 8. No. I'm sorry. He's a number 9, and I'll tell you why.
I don't know. I don't know what he said.
We're going to get to it in a future episode.
So you're just putting him on the 9 with he's no a 9. Yes. With no proof.
Because I'm debating if we're even going to play it because it was so horrible.
Mm.
Bernie Sanders is an 8. Stewart's a 9. Rogan is a 5.
Hmm.
A 4 or a 5, yeah. I agree with you in that he's not like this flaming, you know what I mean? He's not, I mean, Roger Waters.
Right. Roger Waters is a 10.
Yes.
So you're like, are you
he's a
properly
four. Okay, he's a four.
Grading
Rogan's,
these
Rogan's
people?
Rogan's a 4.
And you want to say Jon Stewart's a 9 and Roger Waters is a 10?
Yes, because Stewart, he has a platform and he has a way of making points and a way of conveying ideas that to me is way more dangerous than Joe Rogan. I think he's doing way more damage. And by the way, Rogan said something else. And the truth, we can't even repeat exactly what he said because it's actual kfirah. But he had someone on his show and he was talking about how Moshe Rabbeinu basically...
Oh, I don't even want to go here. I won't even go here.
Well, I'm not going to say what he said.
I don't even want to reference it. I don't want to talk about it. I
just
want to
make
absurd.
One point. Oh, so you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Yeah. So he said something about Moshe Rabbeinu when he was at the burning bush. And he basically said a whole bunch of kfirah. We're not going to say the kfirah. But... One thing, just to show you how clueless he is, and maybe this defends your position, is that he says, oh, yeah, so Moses was at the bush, and the next thing you know, he gives them the Ten Commandments. Dude, you left out the whole middle part, the whole Exodus middle part.
Right.
The Ten Commandments came way later.
Right. There was 10 miracles that were in plain view for everybody.
Right.
That was at baseline.
And the Red Sea and the whole Exodus from Egypt. Like, dude, go watch the movies. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right. You do what you got to do. But there is some serious misinformation with this hypothesis.
Come
Can
on.
You even call it that?
Yeah. Like, this is really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. Like, yeah.
No. It borders on moronic.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, moving on. We got to get to United Airlines. Okay, I'm just going to say it. I'm not flying United Airlines anytime soon.
It's a boycott. It's a Kiddush Club ban.
It's a Kiddush Club boycott. Because I can't stop seeing the news. Okay, just as an example. Okay, Israelis are now suing United Airlines. Why? Because their daughter was burned from a hot meal because of what they say was a defective tray table. They say that the tray table was defective. They put the hot meal down, slid off the table, burned her.
You know, that's a very annoying thing. Like, imagine when the tray table is not exactly...
Yes, it's happened to me. Absolutely has
and
happened
then
to me.
Like, the drink is spilling. Like, it's falling. It's sliding. That's the right word. It's sliding down right into your lap. So, yeah, poor girl got burned. Like, that's a lawsuit.
But why? I'm surprised that the news actually writes it as Israelis sue United Airlines. Like, if it was Germans, would they write Germans sue United? Would they say Botswana, you know, people suing? Why? Because it's Israelis. Is it that an anti-Semitic thing? What do you think?
I don't think it's anti-Semitic per se, but, you know, it is Pesach time and they are Israelis. True. And, you know, they burn my daughter like we burn the chametz, you know. Not fair. Not nice.
Not nice. That's not nice.
No, it's not.
Also, United Airlines, a plane was diverted because they found a threat on the bathroom mirror in the plane. We don't know what the threat said.
What do you think? Somebody scrawled in on them. They scratched it in.
Yeah. Or maybe with lipstick, you know, like.
That's like serial killer type.
Yeah. Well, it was bad enough, but they didn't say what it was.
What could it possibly say?
Plane's going down.
Exactly. Bomb on plane. Something to that effect, yeah. I imagine.
Yes.
But this is a United?
United.
Huh. But you can't blame them for that.
Well, maybe their security should have been better. I don't know.
Maybe it wasn't a death threat at all. Maybe it was just disclosing things about the United staff. Like, this plane is unsafe. Maybe that's what they write.
Ooh, a whistleblower.
Exactly.
A whistleblower in the bathroom. Here you go. Okay, another United plane had to be diverted because it had a loose cabin door.
I don't know how.
How could it be?
How could it be?
How could it
be? Like, what is it? Is it rattling in flight? Like, what's happening exactly? Like did somebody, like, pass it and be like, guys, can I get a stewardess here? Like, this door, I'm uncomfortable with this door.
It's crazy.
And she saw it and was like, yeah, sir, it's rattling. I'm going to tell the captain. Like, how does this go down?
I don't know, but are you going to take United? Like, seriously?
No. I mean, listen, is it cheap flights?
Yes.
Like if their prices are coming down because safety is last priority.
You're going to take it.
I don't know. No. I'm just saying I don't trust myself as a Jew to resist such low prices.
I can't do it. Okay, this story is coming out of New York City. Listen to this one. This is really interesting. New York City agreed to settle and pay $17.5 million for forcing women to remove their hijabs when they had to take mugshots.
Okay, so this is also insane because how are we supposed to, like...
Right, how do you know what's
how
on
do you know
you?
Who's who? Like, what, are we doing iris scans now? Like maybe right. If you have Apple Vision Pros, you can be like, yep, that's her. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like, obviously...
They all look the same, right.
Exactly. Like, I just can't... Like, eye color? Like, no Muslims have blue eyes. Like, very few.
And so as I'm reading it, it says, you know, depending on what they had them do, that's how much they're going to get paid, right? So like if they had to remove a hijab or if they had to remove a hat. So depending on what they did, they're going to get a different amount of money.
So you have to also understand that to New York City, $17 million is for real. Like imagine you pulling out $100. That's
yes.
What it is. That's true. The level. Like if you tell them we'll settle this and it'll only cost $17 million, New York City is like, yes. Absolutely. Let me think about it. Yes, done. Deal. So it's not like this big victory for...
Well, it's a victory for the lawyers because they're the ones who are going to make the majority of the money. But you know what's funny is that the article went out of its way, because you know they always do this, they equivocate. They went out of their way to say, oh, it's not just Muslims, by the way, it's also Jews, because Jewish women cover their hair, so they are also eligible to get money. And so I read that and I was like, oh, for sure there's Jews who are calculating this right now.
Oh, they're for sure like handling this in Lakewood right now as we speak. Baruch, let's clear. If a Shetel gets $25,000 and a Tichel gets $10,000, how much should a Spitzel get? Because it's both.
35K.
Yeah, it's both.
Yeah, for sure.
We have to file. It's sad, but we have to file right away.
100%.
Right? I mean,
we should file, by the way. What are we doing?
Absolutely. If you have the form, I'll fill it out.
But I would assume it has to be, you're only eligible if your wife was arrested.
Oh, yeah.
How many of their wives have been arrested? How many Jewish women have been arrested?
Very few.
That wear
I want to say very few.
I think it's very few. Very few shetel wearing women.
And not only they have to have been arrested, but also have been asked to take off the shetel.
Right.
Which I don't think that has ever occurred, because I don't think they would. Right?
Yeah.
Would you even do it if somebody with a yarmulke was arrested, would they take off their yarmulke?
Yeah.
I don't think it would be requested.
Dina de Malchus Dina. You have to. They tell you take off your yarmulke. You have to. Well, actually, Rabashkin wrote in his book about this where he refused to take off his yarmulke, so I take it back. And he was very adamant, and he explained to them, I can't take off my yarmulke, and they let him wear it.
Because it's almost like a shmad, it feels like. It feels like they're doing it just to, because like, there's no difference in appearance with a person with or without his yarmulke.
Right, that's true. But a hijab is a very
completely different. It overwhelms the entire facial, all the facial features.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is what you need to identify criminals.
Yes, agreed. And moving to Russia and the Russian war in Ukraine, I don't know what to make of this, but Ukrainians are actually going back to Ukraine because they can't afford the dental plans in the countries where they are. You know how like we go to Turkey to get cheap dental? They're going back to Ukraine for dental work.
Wait a second. So they escaped, right? Yes. They escaped with their lives, and there was like, and they just said, you know what? Tooth hurts so much. I am willing to go back. I cannot leave with root canal. What is difference?
That's exactly right.
Which is insane.
Yes.
Because at that point, just pull the tooth.
Right.
Pull the tooth.
Don't go back into the war zone.
And you won't pass away. Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. Agreed. And since we're in that area of the world, you know, Chechnya, which is a Russian republic, right? Mm-hmm. They are banning music that they consider either too fast or too slow.
It's banned.
Yeah. Too fast or too slow.
Do they have a BPM?
Yeah, they do.
What is that? <That's very good. laughs> You like how I pulled that out.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it will be limited. It has to be a tempo between 80 to 116 beats per minute. Anything less, anything more, you're banned.
It's kind of low. I'm not going to lie. 116 is kind of low.
Like, is it? Is it though?
And I know this only because like when you are picking music to work out to, right, you need to have a little bit quicker tempos.
Interesting.
But I don't know what they would have against quicker music.
Well, I'll tell you, because according to the Russian state-run news agency TASS, one of the representatives said, musical, vocal, and choreographic works will be limited to a tempo of 80 to 116 beats per minute to, quote, conform to the Chechen mentality and sense of rhythm.
Very interesting.
So it almost sounds like they feel like they can't dance to anything that's either too slow or too fast.
No, but not only that, the quicker music takes you out of the Chechen mentality somehow.
Yes.
Right? It's too frivolous. It's too loose. Please, it's not party here. We need our music to match our struggle, you know? Like war, slow and all-consuming.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but...
It means something to them, though.
Let me tell you something about like Russian music. You know, a lot of Jewish music is based on Russian music.
Is that true?
MBD, like the famous Mashiach song that
I sang before.
That
yeah,
you sang earlier. Yeah, that's a Russian song.
Really?
Its source is Russian. I don't know where to find this, but it's out there.
Well, maybe one of our eagle-eared listeners, is that a thing? Eagle ears? No, one of our listeners can find if that's true. Do a fact check on it because I couldn't find that.
Yeah, and I think they'll back me up on this because, I've known this for a very long time, and it's not just that Mashiach song. There's a bunch of songs that are actual Russian folk songs that were taken, and now they are the heart of Jewish music. And by the heart, I mean, like, they're the real classics.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if anyone listening knows, please send it, and we'll follow up. Also, if anyone was John Fetterman on Purim, send it to us. We want to see you. And we will follow up and bring it to you next time.
And we thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to join the WhatsApp group. You can do that either from the show notes or visit us at KiddushClubPodcast.com. Follow us on X. Follow us on Instagram. And don't forget to support the cast by visiting buymeacoffee.com/Kiddush Club. Show your support for the cast. And until next time, Kiddush Club out.
And this episode is copyright Kiddush Club Media.